Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. Here at the center of the week, you get to set the agenda. You ask the question. You raise the topic. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Go ahead and call. We'll get to your questions in just a moment. First, a review of issues in the news. We are all waiting for President Bush to speak in a live news conference to speak of Hurricane Katrina. He's going to base his comments on personal observation. The president is taking personal leadership now of the effort to recover and to rescue. This signifies something of the scale of the disaster. And, of course, it's not over yet. The waters are still rising in New Orleans. And there is a ripple effect all throughout the culture. And we're discovering that the tragedy is so much deeper and involves so many more persons with such an extent of devastation that it simply defies any kind of estimation. It just boggles the imagination to try to look at this and imagine the immensity. Here you have communities that have been entirely wiped off the map. You have a shoreline that's been completely redrawn. You have major highways that simply don't exist, bridges that are down. In the city of New Orleans, you have water as high as 18 feet in some parts of the city. You have devastation. You have an environmental disaster. And there are still thousands of people unaccounted for, at least not in contact with their family members elsewhere in the country. Communications down, power out, water system no longer in terms of healthy water and clean drinkable water. And the problem just gets complicated by the fact that there is no ability at this point even to get the kind of rescue, recovery, and disaster teams in some of these affected areas. We really do need to hear from the president on this. This reminds us that in our system of government, the president is not only the chief executive. In many ways, he is the only man who can speak on behalf of the entire nation. The president's symbolic role of leadership within the country comes down to the president's ability to articulate the nation's heart, to focus the nation's concern, and to mobilize the nation's energies. And that's what we expect the president to do just shortly. And when he does, we'll give you a report on what President Bush has to say after touring the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Others have been having their say, and it's worthy of our attention as well. There are obscenities in the middle of a tragedy like this, but it's hard for me to come up with anything more obscene than public statements made by officials in Germany and in the United Kingdom. In Germany, the environment minister, well, he said that the problem of Hurricane Katrina and its intensity and fury is tied to global warming and to American politics. This particular man, holding the office of environmental minister, this is Minister Tritton of the German government. He's a member of the Greens Party. He is himself a radical ecologist. Speaking on a ZDF TV interview, he said this: the increasing frequency of these natural events can only be explained through global warming, which is caused by people. The U.S. citizen, he says, causes about 2.5 times as much greenhouse gas as the average European. Well, thank you. That was really, really helpful. Klaus Christian Malzahn, writing in a German newspaper, in fact, the leading German news magazine, Der Spiegel, accused his own environmental minister of kicking hurricane victims while they're down. And evidently, he's not the only one at this. Minister Tritton said the American president has closed his eyes to the economic and human damage that natural catastrophes such as Katrina, in other words, disasters caused by a lack of climate protection measures, can visit on his country. But also in Great Britain, David King, the British government's chief scientific advisor, gave a similar kind of comment. And he said that these powerful Atlantic storms, in particular Hurricane Katrina, are associated with global warming. He said, and I quote, "We have known since 1987 the intensity of hurricanes is related to surface sea temperature. And we know that over the last 15 to 20 years, surface sea temperatures in these regions have increased by 0.5 degrees centigrade. So it is easy to conclude that the increased intensity of hurricanes is associated with global warming." Well, I guess it's easy to jump to that conclusion if you are a relatively unthoughtful and intellectually dishonest person. Are we really to believe that the fact that over 15 years, the surface temperature of the water has gone up by half a degree centigrade, that explains Hurricane Katrina? Of course not. Just go back to 1969 and Hurricane Camille. Go back to 1938 and the great hurricane that hit the Northeast. Go back to the Florida hurricanes. They brought so much devastation in the 1930s, and you recognize that there are periodic cycles of these intense hurricanes and of dramatic hurricane activity in the Atlantic. I mentioned the word obscenity because this is one of those political realities that needs to catch our attention. Here we have politicians in foreign countries using the occasion of a tremendous tragedy in order to vent their own political opinions. It is an undisguised attack upon the people of the United States. And just leaving the entire argument over global warming to the side for a moment, at the very least, it's bad form, bad timing, but it does reveal the worldviews that are at stake here. Folks, our worldview in thinking about a disaster like Hurricane Katrina has to be deeply rooted in Christian confidence. That's why over the last several days I've been writing a great deal about how we as Christians should be thinking about the reality of suffering, the reality of disaster, and what theologians for years have called the problem of natural evil. We experience this: earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, tornadoes, and hurricanes. In my commentary published yesterday on the goodness of God and the reality of evil, I just remind us that there are two things we cannot compromise. Number one, our absolute confidence in the goodness of God. And number two, our absolute confidence in God's providence, the fact that He rules over all creation. That is really, really important for us, because if you listen to a lot of the talking heads, you listen to a lot of the comments being made, some of them very, very careless. They're saying, look, God did the very best He could, I'm sure, but He could not prevent this. That is not the God of the Bible. Or you have other people say, look, you shouldn't even raise the issue because God has nothing to do with this. No, the God of the Bible is the Lord over His creation. And you will hear other people say, well, God must have had an evil motivation in this. That, too, is simply not the God of the Bible. There are some things we do not understand. That's just a reality. We have finite minds, but the Bible tells us what God would have us to think about these things. In a blog I posted yesterday at albertmuller.com, I cited a certain phrase that came from the great Puritan preacher Charles Spurgeon. But let me just remind you of something else that he said. Charles Spurgeon said, when you can't trace God's hand, trust His heart. And in the end, that's where we have to go. President Bush has begun his news conference speaking of Hurricane Katrina. Let's just listen in for a moment and see what the president had to say.
The Iwo Jima Amphibious Readiness Group to help with disaster response equipment. And the hospital ship USNS Comfort to help provide medical care. The National Guard has nearly 11,000 guardsmen on state active duty to assist governors and local officials with security and disaster response efforts. FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers are working around the clock with Louisiana officials to repair the breaches in the levees so we can stop the flooding in New Orleans. Our second priority is to sustain lives by ensuring adequate food, water, shelter, and medical supplies for survivors and dedicated citizens, our dislocated citizens. FEMA is moving supplies and equipment into the hardest hit areas. The Department of Transportation has provided more than 400 trucks to move 1,000 truckloads containing 5.4 million meals ready to eat, or MREs, 13.4 million liters of water, 10,400 tarps, 3.4 million pounds of ice, 144 generators, 20 containers of pre-positioned disaster supplies, 135,000 blankets and 11,000 cots, and we're just starting. There are more than 78,000 people now in shelters. HHS and CDC are working with local officials to identify operating hospital facilities so we can help them, help the nurses and doctors provide necessary medical care. They're distributing medical supplies, and they're executing a public health plan to control disease and other health-related issues that might arise. Our third priority is executing a comprehensive recovery effort.
That's the President of the United States speaking. That's live time. We came in right in the middle of his comments, and his comments continue. We'll track them for you. When we come back from this break, we'll summarize what the President had to say. But this much is clear. He's mobilizing the federal government, including the United States military, for this effort. Standing behind him are state and local officials. It's a good sign of the kind of unity that is needed in this country to address this tragedy and make a difference in the lives of people. It's Ask Anything Wednesday, your opportunity to set the agenda. We'll talk about Hurricane Katrina and whatever else is on your mind. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. President George W. Bush, in his comments this afternoon, they were just broadcast live after the president reviewed the destruction of Hurricane Katrina. The president said that the federal government will be fully mobilized from cabinet level all the way down, including military units as needed. Some of those units already offshore in the New Orleans area, including some hospital ships from the United States Navy. And also the president spoke of the economic impact of this, recognizing that once lives are secured and all that can be rescued are safe, there's an obvious infrastructure and economic problem, a great, great challenge to rebuild what has been there. And so I think Americans are very interested to hear what the president had to say, and we'll be tracking the developments in days ahead. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. Today, right here in the center of the week, we get to talk about whatever's on your mind. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Savannah, Georgia, where Shane's listening on XM Satellite Radio. Shane, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I'm a short-time listener. I'm finally trying to get closer to God, but I've tried for the wrong reason, I assume so. I should have been closer to God all my life, but I've kind of strayed from Him. The question I got, or how I can put it into words, is I was engaged to a woman, a wonderful woman, faithful, honest, sincere, and I blew it all out of the water because I asked her to sign a prenup because my dad and my sister and my brother all tried to push me to do it. And she said that she won't marry me because she feels that I don't trust her. Is there anything I can do to reconcile this situation?
Well, Shane, let me just say that I think the basic principle here, and I appreciate the openness of your heart just to ask the question and to raise this in terms of our consideration. And I'll tell you, I'm glad you called because this is an issue that has arisen in listeners who've written emails and other things. Let me just say that I believe that the idea of a prenuptial agreement, that is an agreement before marriage about how a dissolution of marriage would be handled, is incompatible with the biblical understanding of marriage as a permanent and enduring covenant. And so I understand all the legal advice, and that the background of that is the high divorce rate and all the rest. But it is our Christian responsibility never to enter into a marriage to which we're not committed as a permanent relationship. And I think, Shane, you can probably understand, at least I think I can understand, how your fiancé would have responded to this, because the very raising of the issue of a prenup agreement indicates that we're at least holding a defensive position in case this marriage doesn't work out. And so I would just suggest to you that I think as a Christian, I would be very, very concerned about the very idea of a prenuptial agreement. I wouldn't marry a woman to whom I was unwilling to make an absolutely permanent commitment, or I wouldn't marry a woman who wasn't ready to make that same level of commitment and whose heart I absolutely trusted. This is the real mystery of Christian marriage. It is the union of a man and a woman before God in a holy and indissoluble covenant. And, one of the interesting things is that you have the secular world with its no-fault divorce laws and all the rest saying that marriage vows can be made and broken at will. But God's word just does not say that. And it says exactly the opposite. And for that reason, I'm just about positive that your fiancé saw that not only as a lack of trust, but as a lack of trust in marriage, not just a lack of trust in her, but a lack of trust in marriage. Shane, I appreciate the fact that you called, and let me say, I would just very carefully think through the whole prenup thing, and, you know, it just may be that one thing you need to do is think this thing through and then go back and say, I should never have raised this issue. I've been thinking about it, been talking with Christians, and they've helped me to understand it was the wrong way to go. And I talk with some really mature Christian friends and perhaps a good minister about how to address this. A good Bible-believing church is where we should be accountable and where we should find the very finest advice. Shane, God bless you. Thank you for calling the program. We're going to go to Adam calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Adam, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. I want to first thank you and commend you for what you do at Southern and the direction it's going. And for you just being an evangelical standing out in today's world, I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
My question is, I am going to a church plant, a fairly new church plant here, and they have just now been discussing the leadership there. And they are going under the formation of about three pastors. I would alternate the teaching on Sundays and the different Bible studies that we do, and that they would make decision as together as the three men. And I was just wondering, I know, you know, we've always done churches with one pastor, you know, and then maybe deacons and elders and other types of leaders. But I'm just wondering, what is the biblical stance on this? Is there something that says we're supposed to only have one, or can a team like this do it or that? And I'm just thinking about joining the church, and so I wanted to get this straightened out first before I do.
Adam, thank you so much for your call. And this is the kind of question that comes up where a lot of churches are debating New Testament ecclesiology. How are we to organize ourselves? And I guess I should say I hope they're really trying to come to terms with New Testament ecclesiology. There's some churches that are really looking more to secular management theory and organizational systems in order to find how they should organize their church. But, you know, the New Testament says two things I think are really important here, Adam. First of all, in 1 Timothy 3, just to take one text, you have a leader with teaching responsibility, an elder, yes, but he's identified as episkopos, as a bishop. Now, I'm a Baptist. I don't believe that that means a bishop over many churches. I believe that means that there is in the church a senior spiritual leader, an elder who is certainly invested with the teaching office, who is the bishop. And, you know, honestly, the idea of a rotating pastorate is of considerable concern to me. But before I get there, I have to say the first thing is that there is a bishop who is the spiritual authority in the church and the lead teacher, but there is also a plurality of teachers in the church. That's another very clear New Testament teaching. And I don't care how large the church is, and even if you don't call these persons teaching elders, there must be people in the church who, along with the pastor slash elder slash bishop, also take on teaching responsibility. And so in different teaching settings, certainly there can be some rotation. But in terms of a kind of a three-headed pastorate in which you actually have three men with equal authority and they're just rotating the teaching ministry, I would have some concern about consistency there, about leadership there. And I can just tell you, wherever two or three Baptists or two or three Christians are gathered, there's going to be some level of authority among them. I mean, there's no such thing as equality. Someone's going to have a stronger argument. Someone's going to have a stronger personality. Rather than just have it happen by that kind of accident, I would rather the church invest that authority. I think that's the biblical model. The church should invest that authority in one person. Can he have many others teach alongside him? Absolutely. But one man needs to have the strategic accountability for the teaching of God's word. And, you know, Adam, that's the best way I know to put it. Does that answer make sense?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Well, God bless you. You know, I'm happy always to hear that there's a church being planted, and what we all need to hope for and pray for is that these churches will grow up into full Christian maturity, showing all the marks of the church, faithfully fulfilling all that Christ assigned local congregations. And biblical leadership is one of those essential marks. It's not like we get to make it up as we go along. The titles, well, you know, that's not the biggest issue, although the New Testament even gives names. You have a pastor, you have bishops, you have elders, and you have deacons. But even more important than the words are the functions. And where there is a church lacking those functions, that church lacks biblical church leadership, and it will inevitably be weakened by that absence. Folks, it's Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to raise the issue. You get to ask the question. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
as we flew here today, I also asked the pilot to fly over the Gulf Coast region so I could see firsthand the scope and magnitude of the devastation. The vast majority of New Orleans, Louisiana is underwater. Tens of thousands of homes and businesses are beyond repair. Along the Mississippi Gulf Coast has been completely destroyed. Mobile is flooded. We are dealing with one of the worst natural disasters in our nation's history.
There you go. One of the worst natural disasters in our nation's history. The President of the United States, George W. Bush, speaking just minutes ago, and certainly he is right about that. And I know it meant a lot to have the president fly over that area and see it, but, you know, all of America is looking at those sites as well, just trying to take in what this means. And the president spoke for all of us in really articulating the determination of the nation that we will not let this thing stand and that we will rebuild the infrastructure, but first recover the people. Insofar as there is a possibility of rescuing even one, that's where the energies have to be placed right now. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Chris, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Dr. Mueller?
Yes, Chris, go right ahead.
I had a question for you. Do you know about this Reverend Phelps, who claims to be a Baptist, who's running around the country talking about protesting soldiers who died in Iraq because they're defending a country that harbors homosexuals?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have right before me a news release that says something about him. And let me tell you, one of my main ambitions in life has been to give Fred Phelps as little attention and publicity as possible. But he has crossed a line here that simply demands a response. Mr. Phelps is pastor of an independent church in Wichita, in Topeka, Kansas. And he is well known for demonstrating that this is not a man who hates homosexuality. This is a man who hates homosexuals. And it is an obsessive hatred that goes so far beyond what is even imaginable that I can only believe this is a deeply demonic representation of evil, especially when it's done in the name of Christ. And I have seen some of it firsthand. Reverend Phelps and his crowd have protested outside the Southern Baptist Convention. I believe that should be a badge of honor for any denomination, given the hatred this man expresses. But really, I was completely unprepared for what I read about when he said this statement. He said, "Thank God for IEDs, that's improvised explosive devices, killing American soldiers in strange lands every day. Westboro Baptist Church rejoices every time the Lord God in his vengeance kills or maims an American soldier with an improvised explosive device." He went on, he said, "This nation bombed and raided the Westboro Baptist Church, and now the holy God that inhabits eternity is repaying those heinous acts with his retaliatory wrath." Talk about a self-centered universe here. Not to mention the deep hatreds that are expressed out of this. He went on, he said that his church will picket the funerals of these godless army American soldiers when their pieces return home. And I just cannot imagine a heart that could possibly articulate such words. I cannot imagine. Well, except that the Bible says that that out of the heart proceedeth the words. And so evidently, you're looking at a hatred here that is almost impossible to really even identify or understand. But we do know this. This is completely incompatible with biblical Christianity. Biblical Christianity names sin for what it is. But biblical Christianity requires us to respond with compassionate truth-telling and genuine love, not the kind of hatred that's demonstrated here. And it's almost impossible even to take this into account. You look at these words and you almost can't believe they are meant seriously. But regrettably, it appears that they are. Chris, where did you see these remarks? What kind of publicity is out there, you think?
Well, unfortunately, I think this man does get publicity, I've called into your show several times, Dr. Mullen. I have disagreements with you, staunch disagreements about homosexuality and gay rights, but I'm glad to hear that you would repudiate what this man has to say, because I find him to be the most hateful person who's ever gone out and claimed to be, you know, Christian or loving or anything, and to say things like that. So I'm glad to hear that you repudiate him and his comments.
Well, Chris, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your listening, and you give us the gift of your candor as well. And, you know, this is one of those reminders to us that we have to be very, very careful to disassociate ourselves from the kind of comments that are rooted in this kind of hatred. And I'll be honest, This is an embarrassment. This ministry, these statements are an embarrassment to anyone who stands for biblical Christianity. Because the very fact that he says this, speaking as pastor of an organization that calls itself a church, casts a shadow upon everything any of us would say. It's a filth. It is indeed an absolute travesty that we have to separate ourselves from. We're living in interesting days. The very thought, just to take what we've talked about today, that you would have the environment minister in Germany saying that this hurricane's due to American environmental policies, and having Fred Phelps speaking about American soldiers being celebrated when they are killed, this is indeed a sick, sick time. Let's Ask Anything Wednesday. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Well, they say time's relative. I don't know about that, but I'll tell you, there is no time that seems as relative as Ask Anything Wednesday. This show just seems to go faster than any other program, partly because I don't know what we're going to talk about until you call. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From Atlanta, Georgia, we have Chris listening on XM Satellite Radio. It's your turn, Chris.
Hello, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question I wanted to run by you and get your take on a situation that's been all over the email system and the news lately, and that is the revealing of Starbucks openly supporting homosexuality under the umbrella definition of diversity. And a lot of buzz about that in the Christian community here in Georgia, and requests to no longer visit or purchase your products from Starbucks. To what extent do you think it be appropriate that we not visit Starbucks or partake in any products that a company that does support such an activity under diversity be? I mean, should we be removing ourselves from supporting any of these organizations?
Well, you know, Chris, at some point, you know, first of all, we know we are morally responsible in terms of our economic lives. And so where we spend our money, where we go for entertainment, where we do our business, we know that there are moral decisions made there and there's a moral accountability. But we also know we're in a fallen world and we're operating in a fallen economy. So hang with me here a minute. Let me give you an argument. Let me see what you think about this. I have an allergy to most boycotts. Because I think in order to be effective, the boycott has to emerge out of a very specific and just unquestionably wrong action or policy on the part of a company. It has to be focused on that, and it has to be with very limited aims. I don't think it is very effective in this economic context just to say I'm going to boycott a multinational company with no particular way of kind of getting out of that boycott and making your point. The reality is that you could stop going to Starbucks and go to some other business that would have equally atrocious policies that you just may not even know about or that you may not even inquire about. Now, let me go back to Starbucks for a minute. I am not pleased one bit that they are publishing on so many of these cups statements that are calling for the normalization of homosexuality. These are statements made by famous people, and Starbucks is packaging this as cups to make you think. But before I go off on the deep end of a harangue against Starbucks on this, I need to at least be intellectually honest and tell you that they're also putting on cups quotations from people like Michael Medved, who's my fellow Salem talk show host and a conservative, and Jonah Goldberg of National Review magazine. And so, you know, I guess the worst thing that I want to say about it is it kind of levels all this out so that the statement pushing a homosexual agenda just gets leveled out with these others. And I'm not accepting that that's a level plane of meaning there. Let me be very clear. But I just think we need to be very careful not to have some kind of knee-jerk response that simply says, we're afraid of a debate. I guess that's the big issue. I'm not afraid of a debate on homosexuality. And as long as they're going to allow both sides of the debate, then I'm going to enter into it. But let me tell you something, Chris. We can count on a business doing what it thinks is in its own best interest. That's the bottom line. And Starbucks thinks this is good business. And if you're offended by this cup, I'm offended by the ones that have the statement, pushing a homosexual agenda or suggesting the normalization of homosexuality, then I'd take that up with the manager. But let's be honest, That's not the only kind of statement they have published on there. And again, I'm not afraid of a debate. When I see something like that, I'm not so much offended as I want to say, hey, this is an idea I want to take on. Let me respond with a different kind of argument. And so I think a winsome Christian argument will just get you a whole lot further than boycotting a company, because that just looks like a defensive act rather than a positive act of true and courageous engagement. Chris, does that make any sense?
I think it does, and you've actually hit at the core of my struggle with it, with the balance of other statements being published on their cups. And I just could not, under the diversity banner, I know that this is just an organizational way of making themselves look publicly and politically correct, and I just could not find it within me to say, well, for that reason and that reason alone, I'm just going to have to withdraw from drinking Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, you know, Chris, there's another interesting point in this. Starbucks said in one of their ads that they hoped that these comments would prompt conversation. Well, you know, I'd be happy about that. You know, even if one of the statements with which I disagreed was a prompt for a conversation, you know, a coffee shop's an interesting place to start to talk to someone. And if you get to talk to them about something as important as morality, as important as marriage, as important as sexuality, you know, that could be a God-given opportunity. I'm not saying that I'm pleased that the statements are there. I am saying that this culture throws us some angular opportunities. They're not the opportunities we might ask for, but they're the opportunities that we're nonetheless, I think, called upon to seize. Chris, thanks for calling from Atlanta. It's great to hear from you. Folks, let's remember right now that there are folks all over America. There are people, especially in the Gulf Coast, in that affected region, who can't call because they have no phone lines. They have no communication system. In the affected regions of Hurricane Katrina, there are people right now that can't get a hold of their family members. They simply don't know where they are. It looks like that the electricity may be out for as long as 3 to 4 months. That's a best-case scenario reported by Louisiana Governor Blanco. And they're in terms of phone systems, looking at an even longer period of time. Cell phones are dying out. It's interesting that many family members were eventually able to establish contact because they were able to get even a weak cell signal, but there's no electricity to recharge those batteries. And so those of us who take this kind of communication for granted right now, and we all do when we have it, we need to recognize there are people right now who really need to have even the most minimal communication to let people know where they are and how they're doing, to give reassurance. We've got to pray for our fellow citizens. And, you know, if you were in the affected regions of Louisiana or Mississippi or Alabama right now, let me tell you some things you wouldn't be worried about. You wouldn't be worried about where you were going to choose to go to dinner tonight in a restaurant. You wouldn't be worried about whether you could make the latest sale at the department store. You wouldn't be worried about how many volunteer activities and sports events that you wanted your kids to be involved in. You'd be thanking God you're alive, and you'd be looking for how many others you could save. This is a wake-up call for America. I hope it is a sobering moment. I speak to you today from a safe and dry place, and I recognize how God's grace and mercy are demonstrated in that to me. But I can't take this for granted, and I have to think of all those today right now that are standing on a rooftop or standing in feet of water waiting to be rescued or hidden away, perhaps injured, where no one even knows where they are. I'll be back with some final thoughts. This is Ask Anything Wednesday, and you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It's been Ask Anything Wednesday, and we've been asked some interesting questions today, and we've had to say some pretty sharp things, just given the realities we face in this cultural moment. It's a reminder to us that we don't get to choose the issues. We as Christians have to face what the culture brings to us, what the society's talking about, the issues that are raised by our times, and we have to be ready to give a distinctively Christian and biblical answer. That's not always easy to do. That's why we need to have a conversation about it. That's why local churches need to be helping their members to think about it and to think Christianly, to start connecting the dots of Christian truth and building a comprehensive Christian worldview. There's some issues that arise in significant articles, some of them in scholarly journals, some of them just in the daily newspaper. But one from a scholarly journal caught my eye, and it became the subject for my commentary, published today at albertmoeller.com. It's on the new fertility divide between the United States and Canada. You know, you take something like a birth rate statistic, and you wonder, what does it mean? Well, the fact is that the birth rate is going down in Canada and now represents a 25% lower birth rate than in the United States. Two researchers, in this case, Barbara Boyle Torrey and Nicholas Eberstedt, writing in the August-September edition of Policy Review, look at the statistics, and they found a couple of very important factors behind it. Number one, they found that families in which the father is understood to have a strong role are likely to have more kids. Now, I think there's good reason for that. But it also means that where feminism has a greater influence and where the father is understood to have a more peripheral role, the birth rate goes down. The other thing they discovered is that birth rates are tied to church attendance. I think we can come up with a good reason for that, too. The Christian worldview uniquely welcomes babies, celebrates births, and understands that children are to be received as wonderful gifts from God. Furthermore, the Christian worldview also privileges parenthood and understands that we, indeed, are called to that incredible role as mothers and fathers, and that we should see it as one of the greatest privileges and challenges of life. So I'm not surprised by this research, but I found it very interesting. It's always significant when you see documentation of this form, and when it comes from social scientists writing in a journal like Policy Review, it's a reminder that God has many different ways of making his point. Sometimes you can find the point God would want us to see right in the demography tables. It tells us something that Scripture has already asserted. It illustrates it right in the context of our times. Well, thanks for your calls today. I always look forward to this program to see what's on the mind of our listeners. Remember, next week we'll be back again for Ask Anything Wednesday. Every day, go to the website at albertmoeller.com. You'll find Monday through Friday a daily commentary and every day weblog entries that will give you some talking and thinking points. We'll be back tomorrow for the program. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.